Beijing warns Washington over American sanctions on its military. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Rob Young. Good morning. China has told the US to withdraw sanctions on its military or bear the consequences. The Trump administration has announced it's punishing Beijing for purchasing 10 Russian jets and missiles, breaching American sanctions on Moscow. These were introduced after Russian action in Ukraine and alleged interference in US politics. Chinese and Russian forces took part in giant Russian war games held earlier this month. The BBC's Jeff Lee in Beijing has more.
China has taken part in what is described as the largest military exercise in eastern Russia. But China's military ties with Russia are more than that. In 2015, China ordered 24 Su-35 fighters from Russia in a deal worth some $2 billion. 14 of them have already been delivered, and the Russian defense contractor Rostec said it would deliver the rest of them within this year. And in 2014, China ordered several S-400 surface-to-air missile systems, in a deal that Chinese media reported to be worth some $3 billion. The first parts of the systems were delivered earlier this year. I've spoken to some experts earlier, and they say the US is seeing all this Chinese money as a threat to its national interests. That's why it's imposing these sanctions.
Jeff Lee, let's do the numbers. Asian markets enjoyed another day of decent gains on Friday as investors seem to hope trade relations between China and the US won't deteriorate much further. Stocks in Europe are on the rise too. London's FTSE 100 is up 60 points at 7,427 as the value of the British pound fell. That after European Union leaders rejected Britain's proposals for their economic relationship after Brexit. Now, palm oil is a key ingredient in many consumer products, such as shampoo and makeup. But its biggest producer, Indonesia, has put in place a further ban on any new palm oil development for the next 3 years and ordered a review of current plantations. The industry's rapid growth has been blamed for the destruction of important tropical forests. Here's the BBC's Faria Masood with more.
In a blow to one of Indonesia's most valuable industries, the ban on new palm oil factories is being seen as punishment for a sector blamed for environmental damage. That's because in 2015, huge forest fires caused devastation across the country and were even called a crime against humanity. It was thought the unregulated agribusiness was to blame. Indonesia's tropical forests represent some of the most diverse habitats on the planet. Palm oil, mainly produced in Malaysia and Indonesia, is used in a vast number of products globally, from cosmetics to snacks, and is a big export earner for both countries, though most of the profits go to only a few conglomerates. Indonesia produces about 40% of the world's palm oil.
The BBC's Faria Masood. Now, if you have a bike-sharing scheme in your town or city, you might have become used to bikes lying around on street corners. There's been a surge in bike-sharing around the world in recent years, thanks largely to Chinese companies promoting dockless bike schemes, where you can leave the bike wherever you want after you've used it. But recently, a series of failures of the schemes in European and US cities have raised the question, does the business model really work? The BBC's Ed Butler hit the streets to find out.
I'm out on the streets of central London renting a Mobike. It's a kind of bicycle owned by a Chinese company and it sits in front of me. It's rather, a pretty heavy beast, extremely heavy and orange. There are no docking stations for Mobikes. You just find one on the street with an app on your phone. You unlock it, it makes this sound, and then you can ride it off. But the bike sharing revolution, as it's being touted, doesn't seem to be going all that smoothly at the moment.
They couldn't get enough people to fix the bikes. They couldn't get parts to fix the bikes. Bikes would just disappear for weeks at a time with no communication. People didn't know what was going on, so they returned their deposit and just stopped using them.
That's cycling campaigner Nick Hubble talking about the experience of Mobike in Manchester in the United Kingdom. But earlier this month, after just a year of operation there, the company pulled the plug, blaming vandalism. Steve Milton is Mobike's head of growth in Europe.
We were the only provider in Manchester, and so somewhat we were the first ones in. Research does say that if you're the only bike provider in a city, you're somewhat exposed. If you have two or more providers, it creates a network effect, and people get used to riding bikes, etc., used to the sharing economy.
Mobike's Chinese rival, Ofo, has itself pulled out of several cities in the US, a response, it seems, to efforts by those cities to regulate their industry. Dana Yanoka is a researcher at the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy in Washington, D.C.
So cities like Dallas is a good example. All of a sudden, within a couple of months, there were 20,000 bikes on the ground. And of course, that led to bikes being sort of strewn around sidewalks and blocking pedestrian zones.
Mobike and Ofo's struggles raise the question of whether the dockless bike sharing system can really flourish outside of China. Julian Scriven from the bike sharing company Nextbike gives his assessment.
Dockless works in some very specific instances, and those specific instances are actually quite common in China, and it's a very, very high population density. It's a relatively relaxed regulatory framework. When we come into Europe, of course, there's a lot more regulation. Cities will not tolerate almost flooding of bikes into the streets.
Ed Butler. And finally, North Korea's government-owned cosmetics factory says its products are just as good as big Western brands. It says it's analysed dozens of Western products after gifts from the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. In London, I'm Rob Young with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.